Hello, welcome to episode 2 of Killer's Crawl Space. Bear with me if I'm heavy breathing and all that. I've been battling a cold for the past week, and then nerves have been shot with everything else that is going on. But this episode is about Ed Gein, one of my personal, I guess, well, if you say favorites, I guess you can kind of use that term, even though it's kind of weird to use in this context, but always found an interest in him dating back a long, long time ago. But he's a very kind of common, kind of not common. He has inspired a lot of movies and stuff, and one of the biggest ones is Leatherface from Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Norman Bates from Psycho. Really obsessed with his mother. But, you know, it all started back. He was born in August 27, 1906. He died July 26, 1948. He was known as the Butcher of Plainfield in Wisconsin. Excuse me. But he was, most of them just say a murderer, you know, not really a serial killer, because they said, you know, most of the experts say it has to be three victims with a cooling off time period. But he also was a body snatcher. If I remember correctly, he possibly dug up, he said, around 40 graves. He kept, you know, most of the stuff that he wanted off of them. And, yeah, pretty interesting stuff. But I know he's always said that he never had sex with the bodies or anything like that. But, you know, what can you say, I guess? But he was known for two murders, Mary Hogan in 1954 and then Bernice Warden in 1957. Mary Hogan was a tavern owner back then, and he ended up killing her, and nobody even knew where she went and all that. And from my understanding, from things that I have read, was that he even joked about it to, like, some of the locals, saying, you know, they're like, I wonder where she went. He'd be like, oh, she's up in my attic or something like that. And nobody believed him because they said he had a weird sense of humor. But, excuse me. What kind of basically inspired everything with him is, excuse me again. You know, it goes back to his mom. You know, his dad was an alcoholic. You know, most alcoholics, they can't keep a job. Well, I'm not saying all of them, but you know what I mean. But he worked at various places. You know, they end up buying a farm and moved there in Wisconsin. She was kind of really religious, from my understanding and from everything I've read. Ed only left the farm, you know, to attend school and stuff like that. You know, back in that time he was, you know, doing chores and stuff around the house when he wasn't at school, but she always preached to her two boys. Trying to think. His brother was, Henry was his brother's name. I was for some reason thinking Harry, but she preached about him, you know, basically the evil of drinking, the women, and all that, how bad everything was. And a lot of things I've read on his early days is that he was shy and he was strange. Like I said, where he had this weird personality, like, well, a sense of humor, that he would just laugh and stuff. And he had a very poor social development. One good thing that I've noticed that he did do, like, he was a very good reader. Like, he seemed to enjoy that quite a bit. So, which, who doesn't like to read? Excuse me again. Ed Gein's dad died in the 1940, I think, of heart failure. He was in his mid-60s. The two boys, you know, Henry and Ed, they began doing odd jobs, you know, to help around. And he actually babysitted kids, which I always found was interesting. Which I kind of, I guess in a way you could see it. Because, well, there's a lot of adults, you know, that kind of get more relatable to children. Well, in this during this time and stuff, his brother Henry kind of started dating a woman. And she had two kids, and she planned, he planned on moving in with her and, you know, going to leave the household and all that. Well, Ed kind of took it very personal, it seems like. Like I said, he was like, his mom's words, that's what he lived by. And in the mid-40s, they were burning marsh and stuff away on the property, and the fire got out of control, drawing attention to the local fire department. Once they got the fire and everything settled, he said his brother was missing. You know, they gathered a search party, found his brother laying face down. You know, he'd been dead for a while. And they think it was heart failure is what killed him. He hadn't been burned or anything. He was just, you know, by, I guess, where, like, the fire started. And the one book I read on him, it said that his brother had bruises on his head. The police dismissed the possibility of foul play. They kind of believed it was just an accident theory. That's what they accepted. And an autopsy was not performed. But it was later, asphyxiation was the cause of death. Some expect that Ed Gein killed his brother. I personally think he killed his brother because of just, you know, how he was. He's like, you know, my brother's going to go away from the family. You know, it's just him and his mom and his brother. So I just think he kind of didn't want his brother to leave and kind of got mad that he disrespected their mother. So that's my personal belief that, you know, he did kill his brother. So that would actually be three victims, with his brother being the first. But it came down to, you know, just him and his mother. And Augusta, she had a stroke, not long to after Henry's death, and excuse me, Ed took care of her, and she eventually passed away at the end of 45, so you're looking at probably about over a year from when Henry died. And well, you knew that he was going to be hurt very, very bad over her death and stuff because, you know, that was basically what he was raised with, was his mother. He continued, you know, doing a little bit of stuff, earning money on odd jobs. And during this time, he actually boarded up rooms that was used by his mother, excuse me, including his upstairs, the downstairs parlor, living room, leaving them untouched while the rest of the house, you know, became basically where he would walk off to. During this time, he became interested in reading more, like, weird, like, magazines that dealt with, like, death and adventure stories, cannibals, Nazis, and all that. Excuse me. And you know, he's still done a lot of, like I said, or just a few minutes ago, that he started doing, like, odd jobs and stuff, still, to help supply. And he eventually sold some of the acres on his property. Then on the morning of November 16th, 1957, excuse me, the Plainfield Hardware Store owner, Bernice Warden, a resident had reported the hardware store truck had been driven out from the rear of the building around 9:30 a.m. The hardware store was closed the entire day. Like, around this time, from my understanding, from everything I've read, was that this was basically the first day of hunting season, and, like, everybody was gone. Her son, everything. Well, eventually her son entered that evening and found the cash register open, bloodstains on the floor. And then he said that Ed Gein had been in the store the evening before his mother's disappearance. I think he bought antifreeze, or he said he would return for antifreeze on that morning. Well, they found actually a sales receipt that had a gallon of antifreeze that she written out to. I don't know if it's actually written out to him, but where he heard him say all that. So, excuse me, I gotta get me a drink of something. But on the same evening, he was eventually arrested, and they searched his farm. They found her, Bernice Warden's decapitated body, in a shed in his property, hung upside down by ropes at her wrist with a cross by her anchors. She was kind of, excuse me, sorry about this. The torso was dressed out, you know, cut out like a deer, you know, how people hang them up. And she had been shot by a .22 caliber rifle, and mutilations were made after her death. Like, you could probably go anywhere online and see, you know, her body and stuff. It's pretty gruesome. I will admit, it's pretty gruesome. But from my understanding, when this body was found, there was no electricity in his house, and they all had flashlights. Excuse me again. Well, like, from my understanding, one of the officers bumped into it, to her body, and then turned around and right there she was. So, very, very interesting. And I don't know, that would just be freaky to me. Like, turn around and see a dead body hanging upside down like that. Excuse me again. But during that whole search of the house, they found whole human bones, fragments, like waste baskets, lampshades, seats, like upholsters, rubbed skin, skulls on the bedpost, female skull, someone with the top sawn off, which I guess they would be made for bowls and stuff. A corset made out of a female torso, leggings made out of from human skin, mask made out of a female's head. Then they found Mary Hogan's head in a paper bag. From everything I have read on this, was that he picked the bag up and put his hand down in the bag, felt hair or something, and then pulled her head out of the bag. Pretty disturbing. And this is how they realized that he had killed Mary Hogan. But I think, like, it was just her face mask, I guess, that he made out of her. Hell, either way, it's still, like I said, still disturbing. They end up finding Bernice's head in a sack. excuse me. Bernice Warden's heart was found in a plastic bag in front of the stove, which it's been tossed up in the air if he was a cannibal. And I personally don't think he was. He might have dabbled into it, but I don't know. It could be not, you know. Also found 9 vaginas in a shoebox, a young girl's dress, and 2 female vaginas that judged had been about 15 years old, a belt made out of human nipples, 4 noses, a pair of lips, fingernails and stuff from female fingers. Then, you know, when they questioned him about it, excuse me again, that he said that he admitted to finally, you know, saying, you know, he dug up graves from the late 40s, early 50s, about 40 times, at 3 different local cemeteries. And he always claimed he was in like a dazed state when he done it. But he said a lot of them that he came home empty-handed on some of them. But they claim, and the belief is, he dug up bodies of a recently buried women, middle-aged women, that resembled his mother. And he wanted to be a woman, so they think that he made the human skin and stuff, or like when what they found, and that he would actually wear that as a suit. And they believe, I know one of the movies came out in 2001 with Steve Rells back in it, Dennis Pratt movie, like it has him in an outfit. Dancing around in the moonlight, basically. excuse me again. See, if I remember correctly, going back to the young girl's dress that was found, in one of the books I read, it's been a while, like a couple years since I read it. I want to say there was, I can't remember, I don't think it was in the same area, but a woman, well, a little girl, I don't think it was a full, young, I don't think it was like a little girl, I think it was like a young teenager, maybe, like, or a young adult, like, she went missing, and I guess he had another car at that point, and that car was seen in that area. So, you know, whether it be true or not, I don't know. That's just, you know, that, if that's the case, that'd be like 4 victims right then and there. Trying to remember what her, let me look this up real quick. That's going to bug me. Okay, yeah, okay, right here. Guillen was also considered a suspect in several other unsolved cases in Wisconsin, including the 1953 disappearance of Evelyn Hartley. She was 15. Let me see. I'm wanting to say that this might be... Okay, yeah, he was visiting relatives from a few blocks away from her disappearance, found no trace of remains of her, and he denied it, passed 2 lie detector tests, but, you know, more now they don't really rely on that. He's still considered a suspect. Okay, here's the... Oh, maybe Georgia... Weckler, an 8-year-old that disappeared in 1947. Maybe it was one of the, like I said, it was about his vehicle. I'll have to look it up. Like I said, I kind of, it's weird. They found 15-year-old girl's dress, and then this girl, you know, that they think that he might have took. Whether it did or not, I don't know. You know, this is pretty interesting stuff, because this all happened back in the 50s, but, you know, it would go on, you know, he'd go to jail, but he would actually be found not guilty, and by reason of insanity, which I think for him, yes, he was definitely insane to do all this, and it is crazy, you know, what all, but, a weird thing, though, like, when he was into mental institution, like I said earlier, you know, he lived to be 77 years old. They said, from my understanding, that he could get out. Excuse me again. Yeah, but he could get out, though, back in the, right before he died. But they said, you know, with his name, there had been no way he could have left the nursing home because, well, the mental institution because of that. But they said he didn't remember nothing that he'd done. And I was talking to the FBI profiler, John Douglas, a couple years ago, and where he got an interview, Ed Gein and stuff. He said that Ed Gein was making, like, leather wallets and stuff, you know, which he was a kind of a handyman with making the suits and human suits. Sorry if you hear my ferret in the background. Speaking of ferrets, my one ferret I had before this one, his name was Gein. This one now is named Dahmer. Excuse me. Sorry if this episode, like I said, is awful. I just wanted to get something out there for the end of the month. And, like I said, I hate having to battle a cold, but it happens. But, he was only actually tried for one murder. Even though he, and that was for Bernice Ward, even though, you know, he admitted carrying Mary Hogan and had, you know, her body at his house, you know, with what they found with her head and all that. His property was going to be auctioned off, not too long after all of this. And it was going to be used as a tourist attraction. And supposedly it burns down. I'm pretty sure it was probably the town. Because you know if that house stood today, everybody would be there. Whether it be bought or something like that. You know, especially with paranormal the way it is. I'd be in that house. If I lived in Wisconsin, I'd be in that house every day. You know, investigating it. Because, you know, I wish I would have been able to write Ed Gein, but I was not born before. You know, I was born in 89, so way after he died. But his car now that he hauled the bodies of his victims was sold at a carnival sideshow. That dude back then charged 25 cents to see it. His name was Buddy Gibbons. I don't know where that truck went. I have no clue. So it could still be out there. It could be out there in somebody's woods or something. I have no clue. You know, it could be somewhere. Nobody probably knows where it went. But, okay. Going back to, I'm trying to think. What was it? It was like a big pot thing. I remember somebody had it, and I know Zach Bagans got it. So I'm guessing I can't remember if that was confirmed or not. But I know there's people that go out to Ed Gein's property, which, from my understanding now, it's just, it's got a gate, and it's just trees now. They planted trees all there. I know some people go digging, they'll find like old screws and all that that could date back to then, which, I would just like to own anything from that property. Which my step-grandma, she actually, they lived in that area. Forgot, I want to say maybe 60s maybe. And she talked about how that town always thought. Well, how they always, you know, kind of went back with that and stuff. With the whole You know, Ed Gein and all that. Which, a lot of towns, I don't know, they've... Because, like, West Virginia, you know, we're known for the Mothman. You know, which... Some states are known, you know, like California, you know, a lot of people associate that with, you know, Charles Manson, Richard Marriott, stuff like that. So, Wisconsin, that would be... I could see them kind of living on, especially Plainfield, living on the Ed Gein kind of story. They probably do, which... Excuse me again. Which one thing that's probably really, really interesting too, I find, especially after all these years, you know, going back from the 50s and when Bernice Worden was killed. From my understanding, that place is still a hardware store like it was back then. So, I don't know. I don't know if anybody's been in it, but if you have, please message me and let me know. I'd love to hear about it. But after Ed Gein died in 1984, they actually did put a tombstone there. He was buried beside his mother at the Plainfield Cemetery. And, well, you know how it is with everything like this. People was chipping off parts of it, you know, just to have a piece of it. And it was eventually stolen. It was recovered near Seattle, which is a pretty good area. It was placed in a storage area from the sheriff's department. And now the grave is unmarked. But one thing, it's not an unknown spot. He's between his parents and his brother in the cemetery. So, I think he's like right beside his mom and dad, like right in the middle of them, if I remember correctly. But, like I said, not a lot of people remember him. A lot of people do, a lot of people don't. Excuse me. But he's actually inspired, like I said, like I mentioned before, he inspired a lot of things, you know, with Norman Bates. Leatherface, Buffalo Bill, and the doctor guy from the American Horror Story Salem, the dude that wore the face mask, he inspired him. You know, he's got movies, you know, Deranged came out in the 70s, which is not a bad movie. I watched it a year or so ago. I've only seen bits and pieces of it until here recently. Yeah, I think it was last year. If I got a chance to watch it. Which, in The Lie of the Moon, which is the one that Steve Railsback plays, that's a really good movie. Ed Gein, The Butcher Plainfield, has Kane Hodder in it. I love Kane Hodder, you know, as Jason Voorhees in the four movies he played in. But for Ed Gein, you know, it's a decent movie, but it's not... I don't know. Like, Kane Hodder just don't fit him because Ed Gein was like a 5'4", 5'5", 5'6". I think 5'6". And Kane Hodder 6'3". Completely different. And all that. There's also... I don't know if you guys like Mudvayne or not. I know there's some other music and songs about Ed Gein. But one of the best ones I ever found was Mudvayne, Nothing to Gein. Came out in 2001. You can find it, a live version on YouTube that goes back to, I think, Live at Ozfest 2001. Amazing, amazing. Sorry, I had to quench my thirst. But that song, like, especially that live version, is just killer. If you guys check it out, like, literally check it out. It is, like, totally awesome how everything is in it. Excuse me. Like I said, I apologize. I know me coughing probably gets on everybody's nerves, but it happens. But if you look at it, like what I've talked about through all this, you can kind of think that, you know, instead of him being a murderer, that he actually was a serial killer. Because, you know, you're looking at Bernice Worden, Mary Hogan, like we talked about, his brother. Like I said, I would be like 90% to 99.5% that he killed his brother. The evidence all points to that. You know, he was a suspect in a 15-year-old girl and 8-year-old girl's murder. That would put him, you know, as a pedophile, child killer. Well, I wouldn't really say pedophile, because he might not have done anything. But kind of, the only reason I wouldn't see him going after the girls would be because we're all the women. Sorry again. But it's all the women that he dug up were middle-aged, not little kids. So you kind of do have that going for him, I guess, in a way. But he's a very, very interesting guy to read about. Especially, like I said, in the 50s. This is what he was doing back then in the 50s. You know, basically get away with murder for 3 years with Mary Hogan and then be able to dig up body stuff, which I would find it very interesting if anybody's actually ever investigated the cemetery he's been at, well, where he's buried at, or what the three he's been at and dug up bodies. If anybody's ever been to any of those places, please message me. I'd love to know and see if you guys had any weird vibes. Which I'm surprised he wasn't caught in any of that time frame. Which I guess, you know, he did go late at night, but... well, I guess back in the 50s wouldn't be as bad, because crap nowadays. Last time I investigated a cemetery, had it all set up. And this was after Pokemon Go, you know, came out. But it... Well, at the time, we thought had died down some. But oh no. No, no. There were probably 3 to 5 cars in that cemetery. Like, it's a big cemetery, like 110 acres. But there was 3 to 5 cars from the time we got there to the time we left. Driving around. We'd stand there, be, you know, trying to do audio and... trying to interact, and then car just sat there 10 feet from us and try to catch Pokemon. So we hadn't really been back. So I could, I guess, kind of like I said, in the 50s, see, you know, why he didn't get caught. Unless they're like up a lonely road. Like, so I'm not too familiar with Wisconsin. I've never been there. Love to go there because I'm a Green Bay Packers fan as well. So that's another reason to go to Wisconsin. But I guess that's it for Ed Gein right now. I might do another part on him. Because I have, like, his confessions and stuff like that. There's, like, 12. Let me look. There's 12 different confessions, but I think each of them's, like, quite a bit. There might just be 11. I know a couple of them was... like a few, like 30 some pages long. Yeah, this one's 21. So I might do another part, but like I said, right now that'd be the end of it. Like I said, I apologize for coughing throughout all of it. I sound awful. I'm getting over it though. Like I've had a rough week, you know, with my dog getting shot. Like I said, he just got his leg amputated today. Had a friend die. From an overdose. Got another friend get arrested for sexual assault. Whether he did or not, I don't know. But, excuse me. I'm hoping to have another episode sometime, you know, next month. Hopefully 2 episodes. I'm going to try to shoot for 2 episodes for right now. But, got some pretty exciting news. I've been thinking about this once I started the podcast. I was going to do the, like a Dexter inspired episodes where like I'd focus a murder that was inspired by Dexter. There's a couple of them. I wrote to a guy, another guy went to Moundsville Penitentiary and was there. He's talking about me visiting him. I don't know. Ronald Williams I tried to visit. I had to know him before he went to prison, which I was like in 81. This guy went to prison like in the 82 or something. But, you know, it's worth a shot. That's one thing to promote, you know, the patron. If you go on there, you know, for $1 a month, you know, you support the podcast. For $5 a month, you know, you get randomly entered into a contest. If you win, then we'll talk about a true crime case you won. Which I'm hoping the more episodes I get in, you know, I'm kind of still a little nervous doing this because it's just not a thing I do. Like, I love talking to people about true crime, but this is kind of like I said, you're not going to get like the perfect episode out of it. You know, that's all going to be unedited and all that, and always will be. But like I said, if you help me support me on Patreon, it will kind of go to things like if I do go visit that inmate, you know, that will help me get, because he was talking about recording it too. I don't know how that would be. I'd have to ask him more on it. Sorry about that. Keeping track of the NFL game. My opponent's got a kicker playing. But hopefully, you know, I can do all that, which it probably wouldn't be until next year when I can go visit him, where, you know, tied up with my dog Goober situation. But I hope you enjoyed this episode. Like I said, I apologize again for me coughing. Like I said, this is going to be a podcast that you get the real me. I'm not going to edit, try not to edit any of them. They're always going to be unedited, uncut. So if I'm sick, you're going to hear that. I hope this kind of shared some light on Ed Gein. And another thing, too, sorry. I was talking to Tim last week, and he's writing, what I was telling you about, he's writing a book about the one gentleman. I think his name, I don't know his last name, but I think it's George is his first name. But we might be doing a question thing. We got sending questions, and I record his phone call. So that would be another future episode. So we're looking at a Dexter-inspired episodes. We're looking at possibly Moundsville-type style episodes with, like, people that's been in Moundsville, because I've investigated that place 3 times, and it's a very haunted place, very active place, and it's a wonderful place, I should just say. And then with Tim stuff, that should all be coming up, hopefully, because I know a lot of podcasts are taking breaks right now, especially true crime-wise. You know, with the holidays coming up, but I should be good for the rest of the year. I don't plan on taking very long breaks, still hopefully 2 episodes a month, then maybe more later on. But thank you for tuning in, and hope you enjoyed.